as an industry, we've just got to stop thinking about LinkedIn as a marketing platform. It is a networking platform. It's a learning platform. It's a community and connection platform.
You're listening to the Content 10X podcast, where it's all about content repurposing. I'm Amy Woods, and I'm here to help you maximize your content and find smart ways to get your message in front of more of the right people, whilst also saving time. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Content 10X podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and today we're talking about how to gain cultural buy-in for your employee-led content program. And I'm delighted to welcome a very special guest to share her insights. Sarah Goodall is CEO and founder at Tribal Impact. Now, 10 years ago, she made the jump from B2B marketing leader to founding Tribal Impact. They're a specialist social media consultancy focused on scaling executive branding, corporate influence, and social selling programs on LinkedIn. Just like me, Sarah believes that people trust people more than logos, and she's a strong advocate for the power of employee-led content. She's got a wealth of experience and is an expert on today's subject, so I'm delighted to welcome her to the show. This episode is the fourth and final part of our employee-led content series. You can check out the past episodes for a deeper dive into employee-led content, where you'll find out how to enable employee-led content without forcing it, how to build an employee-led content system that actually works, and why employee-led content is the biggest B2B advantage in 2026. So, as I said, we thought we'd wrap up the series with an expert discussion. So in this episode, Sarah and I talk about why people trust content from their peers over traditional brand messaging. We talk about the importance of building and nurturing employee trust. We talk about why today's buyers and consumers want to know the person behind the brand and how to measure growth, what good looks like with employee-led content. We also chat about the reasons why you should view LinkedIn as a networking platform instead of a marketing platform, and how to shift your cultural mindset and treat your employee-led program as a sustainable initiative, not a one-off campaign. It's a fantastic conversation. I'm excited to share it with you, so let's jump in. Sarah, welcome to the Content 10X podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So on the Content 10X podcast, we have been running a mini series on employee-led content and why it's so important to elevate the voices of the people who work for you and, you know, everything around that, like people-led, employee-led, especially now that we've got so much AI content as well and things like that. So when I thought, right, I need to actually bring an expert on to discuss this with me, I remembered seeing you, Sarah, speak at an event. I think you were on a panel at an event a couple of years ago. I think it was actually in London. I really loved what you were saying about what you guys do at Tribal Impact. And so really looking forward to having the conversation. Thanks for having the time to speak with me for the podcast episode.
Oh, you're so welcome. I love this topic. So you'll have to keep me clipped.
So yeah, no, it's fine. Well, to kick the conversation off for anybody who doesn't know, could you just tell us a little bit about Tribal Impact? So just explain what you do and who you work with.
Yeah, of course. So my name's Sarah. I'm the CEO and founder of Tribal Impact. We started in 2015. And it was born out of the belief that people are more interesting than logos. And if I look back in my career, it's always been in marketing and tech companies. But most recently, before I started Tribal, it was at SAP, and I managed the social media channels for Europe, Middle East and Africa. And honestly, even I was bored of the content that I was pumping out on these channels. It was just a tick box exercise to get some brand content. Have we put it through the advocacy platform? Yes. Have we put it through paid? Yes. Have we put it through the brand? And it was like, this is not right. And I used to look at my peers in the company going, you are way more interesting on social media. And that's where I got the idea for this. And then it became an industry. And this is what we do. So at Tribal, we just purely focus on this very niche sector, which is about activating the employee voices behind the brand, whether they be executives, sales voices, expert voices, but it's all about the habits and the behavior and enabling those voices to strengthen the brand voice and not the other way round, which is what I think we'll get into through these questions, actually.
It's so interesting how long you have been doing this. You know, I think like there's lots of different agencies that have popped up in the last 5 or so years, but like you've been doing this for a while. In terms of what was typically driving people to come and work with you in those early years compared to now, how much has changed?
Yeah, massively. When I first started out, I think some pioneering brands were recognizing this shift. So people, my colleagues from SAP were going into other companies going, hey, we did this at SAP. If you want to get ahead of the game, this is what you need to do here. And it is all around trust building. And I think that those forward-thinking brands that recognized this early wanted to experiment. So 10 years ago, they were kind of experimenting. And then COVID came and the pandemic forced everybody to be at home. So when sales teams were forced to be at home, we had a lot of clients come to us saying they need to have digital selling skills. Now, up until that point, it was a nice to have. We were convincing people that this was a good thing and this is what you needed to do. That point changed a lot because then suddenly everybody was homebound and they needed to carry on building relationships, but in a digital way. And so after that, that sort of accelerated, you know, trusted voices. But then I think more recently with the development of AI, a lot of people are not trusting everything that they see and they're questioning, does that really sound like that person? Is that authentic? Is that really aligned to what I know that they're passionate about? And so people are questioning everything and the sphere of trust and our networks are becoming smaller. And if you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer this year, the 2026 one, it talks about those trust circles are getting smaller. So we are looking at people more locally. We're looking at people in our business. We're looking at more than we are trusting paid influencers, even though we know they're paid. Do you know what I mean? So this is accelerating it again. It's really interesting because when I started Tribal, I always thought, I've got 5 years in this and then the market will be saturated. But it's quite interesting to see how it's changed over the years and the drivers. So yeah, and this is where we are now. So
absolutely. And I saw you recently shared a post on LinkedIn about a Forrester article about B2B predictions, and it was called The Race to Trust and Value on LinkedIn. And you shared a great post that caught my eye about your views on that, because obviously this is the world that you live in. And you talked about influencer relations, how they talked about how that's moving from being more like tactical PR to a business growth strategy. What were the main things that kind of jumped out to you for that? Because I read that after you spoke about it and I found it really interesting. You shared a few views on LinkedIn, but like, what were the biggies that you just thought, gosh, this really resonates with what I'm seeing with the clients that we're working with?
Yeah, the key stat that stopped me on that was that 75% of B2B brands are going to be investing in influencer programs, which I get, right? Because people are recognizing this push for trust, this race to influence. What worries me a little bit, what I see, so when I saw the pandemic and what that did, everybody was like, we need to upskill everybody to use LinkedIn and digital platforms. It was like, right. But you do one webinar and nothing changes, right? Because people don't learn in that way. What you're talking about here is habits and behaviors, and that takes a while. And then we see this race to trust and value and this investment in influence. And I see that, but what worries me a little bit here is that I can see everybody going, we need all our employees like active. We need all our experts writing content. We need all our... But there's a massive piece here that if organizations are not careful, they're going to miss it, which is the right experts need to be talking about the right things. You can't just go you. You've got 2,000 followers on LinkedIn. You take this topic, you take that. I have seen that in brands. That doesn't work. And not all experts will want to be active because they want to retain their knowledge because that's what keeps them trusted and keeps their value high. So you've got to know what buttons to push. And also different roles have different goals within an organization. How a salesperson will build influence will be different to the audiences that an executive's talking to. or how marketing needs to build influence through their expert voices, or there are different roles and goals. This is way more complex than just upping your budget by 75% and going, let's pay to get people writing content and saying nice things about us and sponsoring it. That is just one layer. But if you go even deeper than that, there is a layer which is, if you want your employees to talk about your brand, you've got to get the foundations right, which is all about culture, engagement, trust. I mean, marketing, that's normally left to HR. But if you go down to that layer, this is where the real motivations are for employee advocacy and influence. And, scratching that surface and putting some budget on top of it, hoping that, you know, creating some more content and paying for it to get out there, it's quite superficial unless you look a bit deeper than that, which are the motivations behind it. So I love it. I love all these articles, but there is my slight concern, having done this for so long, that this is more than writing content. It's more than paying for influence. It's more than that, especially in this world where we're all questioning what's trustworthy and what's not anyway. You've got to be careful.
What is your view if people try and treat it a bit more like a campaign that they'll test? So, you know, I knew that was going to push a button. They say, right, let's just give it a go for 3 months or something like that versus a long-term program. So what's your view on that?
Oh, I have strong views about this. I've seen it done by campaigns. And Let's be honest, right? When we work with paid influencers, quite often it can be for an engagement period of time. And thankfully, those periods of time are going for longer for most companies now. They've recognized that you have to build relationships with influencers. And I remember in my SAP days, we hired an influencer to come and do filming at our big customer event. And then that was it. It was a three-month program, three-month campaign. Let's pay them lots of money to say nice things about us to reach a new generation of audience. I was like, why are we doing that? Anyway, it is not a short-term campaign. This is an investment for the future. And I use the word investment intentionally because this is not, let's get that expert writing 10 blogs for that quarter and then let's move on to the next expert and raise. This, you invest in this for the long term. This is behavior change and habits, which take time. But this is also about influence and trust, which also takes time. And I think in a world where we run on quarterly budget cycles and quarterly KPIs and targets, this is hard for companies to get their head around. I'm not going to lie, but this is one of the blockers that I see to building true influence.
And where you mentioned earlier about how, you know, there are different people in the company and they're going to be talking about different things. There'll be different goals and intent behind their content. How do you work with an organization to help identify who are the voices that should be elevated? Like what role should they be in and devise the content strategy? Like what if this is the right person, then what angles are we going to try and help them pull out with their content?
Yeah. That's a great question. So one of the first, we have a methodology and a framework for this. So we have our matrix, which is a 9-box framework. So one of the first things we do is map an organization or a team to the matrix, right? So if you're working with exec teams, we'd map them. If you're working with sales teams, we'd map them. Once we know where they are, it's really important that you understand their learning journey, because there's no point in teaching someone who has 50 followers or connections with no profile on LinkedIn that is not active, teaching them how to create video content, right? The gap is too wide. The comfort gap, the confidence gap, the capability is too wide, right? You've just got to get them to the next step, which is why don't we sort your profile out and figure out who your audience is and how you should be talking to them. And that will be different to everyone, right? To your point, it's different. So I really think mapping the maturity of your team, your organization is the first step. The second step is to identify those ambassadors that are already doing it. Already, your experts that are active, your execs, because there's nothing stronger than peer-to-peer recommendations and that kind of thing. So once everybody sees what someone they know is doing, they're like, oh, I want some of that. I saw this at SAP. I see it in our customers. The rest follow, but in their own good time. You can't force them, push them, accelerate them. They have to get there in their own good time. So recognizing those top voices and enabling them with the content skills, the content creation, co-creation, then enabling those that are dabbling and trying, but get them moving to their next stage of maturity. And those that are doing nothing, the ones that want to, move them up. Like, let's get you started. So it's all baby steps, it's small steps, but there is a very clear maturity journey in this, which is what we call the maturity matrix. And I think that that is critical, because no two departments are the same, no two individuals are the same. They all have different confidence and competence levels. So really understanding that and moving them, nudging them, is massively important. So
how do you get the balance right between enabling and nudging and supporting and controlling, like, and then kind of maybe getting the guardrails too far that it feels a bit scripted and controlled? How do you navigate getting that balance right?
Yeah, it's well, this is hard actually, because the people often that are investing in this are the ones that want brand front and center. Especially when you know what I mean? So if you're working with executives, they'll want executives talking about brand. And it's like, yeah, but your executives aren't just talking to customers. They are also talking to their employees. They are also talking to your future employees. They have different audiences to other people. So making sure that they are equipped with the right content strategy for their target audience is key. So I think it's hard. The way you prove that is you do it through data. I'm data obsessed, and you have to show the impact of a brand-centric approach to a more balanced content approach. So you look at things like, look who's engaging with that brand-focused approach. It's almost like 90% employees. Now look at the focus approach on your leadership and how you approach teams and how you look to hire people and that sort of thing. It's 50% employees, but 50% not. And look, some of your customers and analysts have engaged with that post. So it's showing that qualitative and quantitative data that helps nudge the executives' understanding of why they're doing it is enough to quite often convince them to actually go and do it themselves, which is my ultimate goal. I don't want to be a copywriter for every, you know, we don't do that. We co-create content, but it's not in our interest that they would rely on a company like us. It's more empowering them to do it themselves. So yeah, it's interesting.
Hey, just a little break from this week's episode to let you know about becoming a Content 10X Insider. If you want more content repurposing tips and advice, then why not join hundreds of business owners, marketers, and content creators who get them delivered straight to their inbox once a week by subscribing to the Content 10X newsletter. As well as tips and advice, you get industry updates, inspiring stories, exclusive content, offers, and more. You can subscribe at content10x.com/newsletter, and there's a link in the show notes too. Okay, back to this week's episode. What's your view on personal stories? So like the balance between, you know, teachable insights and like referencing brand and value content based on their expertise and growing that as part of their profile. To, we know the things that work on LinkedIn are often like the personal stories, and I find it all the time. I can share all this stuff about content and repurposing, but I do a post about how it angers me that people put phones on speakerphone in a co-work office or something. And that's what everyone cares about when I talk about the woes of AI in writing. What's your view there? Because you're helping create this content, like that balance between, well, we are trying to like get trust, and trust comes from knowing the person and the human, and therefore it's personal stories as well. But what's the good balance or the fit there?
I think you're right. I think that it's definitely down to the trust, and people want to know the person behind the brand that they work for. So you're there because of your expertise, but there's more to you than just your expertise. And I think this is where trust building and influence really happens. Now, you don't want to do that just because you've got to, because it's part of the strategy. You do it because you want to. And I find it fascinating, actually, that when I share certain topics around my neurodiverse kids or my menopause experience, it connects with people on a different level. And I have customers asking me, it's like, wow, I privately, you know, but they'll say to me, can't believe you shared that. I didn't realize you were going through that or you had that experience. I'm feeling like that, but I don't say anything. Or do you know, so you just connect you. I just find it really lovely, actually, that it deepens my connections on a different level. And I think, you know, as a industry, we've just got to stop thinking about LinkedIn as a marketing platform. It is a networking platform. It's a learning platform. It's a community and connection platform. And that has to come across when you're working with your executives and employees. This is way more than getting brand voice out there. This is about becoming a learning organization, facilitating the culture, creating stronger engagement within your culture. And this is where, for me, it's more than marketing, and why an organization needs to look at this holistically and not tactically.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming back to what we were saying about the longer term program, not these short campaigns.
Totally.
In terms of measurement, though, because that always is going to come up, isn't it? Let's say that there's been a 12-month program that has been running. So it's well underway now, and you've moved people along that maturity journey as well. What would good look like for what you are then measuring? The program's kind of underway and there's certain measurements that you'll be looking for. What would be the, like, the lagging and like the leading indicators that, okay, like, this is working and this is what we need to lean into?
Yeah. I this is a really important thing, because again, I think we need to really look beyond the traditional influence metrics like share of voice, sentiment, engagements, clicks, earned media cost. If we were to do this through a paid campaign, we've got to move this beyond that. So at Tribal, about 2 or 3 years ago, we invested very heavily in our data architecture. So we thought, right, leading indicators are great, which is what I've just described, because it tells you you're on the right path. But until you measure lagging indicators, the correlation of that behavior change to metrics that the business is interested in, whether that's cost-saving metrics or growth-driving metrics, essentially they'll fall into those two buckets. So for example, if you're doing an employer branding program and you're getting ambassadors out there talking about the topics where you have talent skills gaps, you need to be correlating the behaviors of those advocates and where they are to the regional or country total cost per hire, time to hire, these really important metrics that cost money for the business. So correlating the behavior of that program and in that country or in that market unit against the business metrics over time. I'll give you another example. Sales team. So we do this a lot now because it's so important if you want board level buy-in to this. But looking at sales teams and individuals that are digitally selling and they're building digital relationships and they're connected. We look at all this, like connections into target customer accounts and how their content strategy and how frequently and who's engaging with their content. But then you look at their pipeline and you look at their average deal size and you look at the deal velocity time, and you can see digital sellers that have been active for at least 6 months have more pipeline, larger deals, sometimes more deals, sometimes not, depends what industry they're in. Deal velocity is something as well to watch. You know, do those deals move faster? They will, because they're inbound, because these people are nurturing audiences before they become in market. These audiences find them, not the other way around. So these are the kind of metrics that boards are interested in, not necessarily clicks, engagements, influences. They're good. They tell you you're on the right track. So don't scrap them, but you do need to understand how you tie this back to business impact.
With particular individuals, when they are putting themselves out more through content and things like that, and then, you know, it's not just LinkedIn, but imagining that they're then being invited to sit on panels at events as an expert, they're invited on people's podcasts and things like that. So they're becoming a more influential person. People are coming to them, sales cycles getting smaller, things like that. Is it sometimes a case of measuring kind of the sphere of what's going on with person X versus person Y as well? Like, person Y is not posting anything, not doing anything, and this is what all their metrics look like, and this person is doing all this, and look at all those things. Like, is it, can you sometimes do things like that? I know it would be hard because you couldn't say all things are equal at all. They're two human beings. So is that challenging, or can you broadly speak and say, well, this group here are embracing this and these are the metrics here, this group here aren't, and these metrics here, or is that too challenging because of the individuals?
I think you need a sample size big enough to know it's not a fluke. So that for me would be the argument there, is that you need a decent amount of people. But you did touch on something there. You know, it could be that those digital sellers just also are great sales closers, right? So in that example, or that talent recruitment specialist might just be really good at recruiting talent. Whereas somebody else, it might not be their skill set. So it doesn't matter what they do digitally. They might just be good at closing or recruiting, or, but that's why you need a bigger sample set, right? So that's where you start to see behavior change at a group level. And we've seen that correlation happen when a sales leader embraces this. We see their team follow, right? So, and vice versa, when a sales leader doesn't believe in any of this, we see their team not bother either. So I think that direct line management has a massive influence on the behavior and habits of a team. And I think that, again, you know, when we started this conversation, I said, chuck in 75% more budget influence. Do you see what we're doing? We're scratching the surface of all the complexity behind that, which worries me when people chuck more money at influence thinking, oh, more visibility. And it's like, oh, it's deeper than that. So, yeah.
What would you say is the biggest risk that gets raised to you when having conversations about embarking on this type of program and investment? What are the biggest risks that are concerning leaders?
Yeah, one I hear a lot that I thought you were going to raise earlier actually was, well, what if we train all our employees and they leave? We've just trained them to be influential and now they've got a bigger personal brand than the company brand. And I'm like, okay, well, this comes back to the foundation level, right? If they're happy in their role and they're happy in the business and they're connected to the brand, this is how it's connected to that. And they won't want to leave, right? So, or sometimes if they do leave, that's still not a bad thing because they're broadening. Lots of people at your company are connected to this individual that then leaves. They then grow their network somewhere else. It just grows your second degree networks further. So, you know, don't be so worried about this. This is where I think it's treated as a campaign, a one time. This is not about marketing visibility. This is bigger. It's about creating a learning organization. It's about creating influence, community, connectivity, relationships. So if you treat it as a campaign and a visibility program, then I can see why you might be worried, but it's way more than that. So that's one of the biggest concerns. And then measurement, which we've just talked about, that's another risk that they think we pay a load of money and where's the return? You know, people are quite used to seeing paid this, got that, made these calls, got these meetings, paid this, got this much, many clicks. It's not like that.
To what extent is there a worry around the risk of people saying the wrong thing and like reputational damage as well?
Yeah, well, most organizations will have a social media policy. Now, I would argue, do employees know where it is? Have they read it? Do they understand it? And can they apply it? So there's four human errors there that could go wrong with the social media policy.
Yeah.
I don't think just ticking the box saying we've got a policy, governance covered is enough. This is about ongoing enablement and giving them the confidence and the comfort level. It comes through enablement. So the policy is great. Well done. But actually, you've got to live that policy and enable people so they don't fall into that risk. And I do think this is actually where advocacy tools are good. So those that are starting out with sharing, that don't know what to share, how to share, they don't want to share something that's going to get them into trouble. Advocacy tools are brilliant for that. And it just helps them get over that confidence hump and just get them in that habit of sharing, knowing that they're protected because everything they share from the advocacy tool has been approved. And then as they build their confidence, they might start creating their own content and going off the advocacy tool. And that's fine because we want people to create their expertise and turn that into content. But then you can feed that back into the tool. And a lot of companies miss that. It's like, if you've got experts creating content, why are you not feeding that into the tool? Because peers love sharing peer content. I wrote that on LinkedIn this morning. You know, peers love that. We see it in the data. They share their peer content way more than they share brand content in an advocacy tool. So get your experts feeding in. Or because they've dropped out the platform and don't want to share what everyone else is sharing, that's fine. But put their expert content in the platform.
It completely makes sense, doesn't it? It's just it's kind of expected human behavior that you would share and peer content over, as you said before, like brand logos, you know, the connection, the human connection. So if you're proud of something that a peer has recently published or something like that, which you should be, hopefully, you know, you all have, if you have a good culture within the company, you should be proud of the voices within the company. So sharing that peer content versus a logo with some content, it's just natural human behavior. You're more likely to do that, isn't it?
Yeah. And when we talked earlier about trust circles getting smaller and people are looking, trusting their coworkers way more than they trust out people outside of the company, then guess what? That's why those metrics are showing peer content performs better than brand content.
Yeah, exactly. And in our psychology of why we would share things as well, we care how it reflects on us, don't we? You know, we what we share like reflects on us. We care about that. So there's more trust behind it because you know the person. What would you say is one mindset shift that organizations need to make for employee-led content to really work? I know there's loads, but like if you were just to pin down like one mindset shift that you guys could make to make employee-led content work, what would be your biggest mindset shift request?
Yeah, I think this is way bigger than marketing. Honestly, this is a company-wide initiative. Influence does not happen in the marketing department. It's already happening in your sales teams and how they engage customers, in your talent teams and how they engage future candidates. Influence is a strategic approach. It is not a marketing campaign. And I would say when it comes to employee-generated content and engaging employees to be active as part of that influence system, I think I would ask organizations to take this more strategically and put the importance, recognize the importance that it's more than a budget line within the marketing budget. It's connected. It's a connected system. And if you really want to see the power of organizational influence, it's when your employees are creating content, understanding that system, but they're creating a content that's relevant to them, that's also supports the company brand, but it helps with that whole system, and they're not doing it in isolated silos. And I think that would be the biggest mindset shift I think an organization needs to have.
So like right through to this being discussed at board level, then is probably essential then, isn't it, across all those different leadership roles at board level to get it as an agenda item. Right there would be quite significant, I imagine.
Yeah, I know. And I think it has to, because the reality is they're already spending this money in isolated pockets across the business. And actually, that's becoming more and more ineffective for a number of reasons. You know, the cost per click's going up. It's getting harder to hire talent. There's pressure on talent teams and their budgets. There's cost pressures across the business. There's external pressures across the business. It needs to be looked at holistically. That would be my wish for mindset shift. So,
okay. And then the final question. So if we could look ahead into the next couple of years, like next year or two, what do you think is going to be particularly different about social selling in B2B employee activation? A couple of years down the line, like biggest disruptor, I guess, to it, and how you think it might disrupt, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think it would be, I think AI is massively disrupting this whole sector. We see a lot of organizations restructuring. We see them hiring different roles in. It's unsettling for employees and therefore unsettling for cultures, right? So, and when you unsettle the culture, you're unsettling that foundation for authentic advocacy, all right? So on that level, I think AI is disrupting. But I also see AI being a massive opportunity for organizations to not automate. We're already seeing tons of AI-generated content. It creates noise. So I think there's going to be much more emphasis on authentic voices. I'm seeing it everywhere through all the studies that I read. I saw it 2 or 3 years ago. Video is massive because I think video as content creation is going to be huge because you can't, even though you can fake video through AI, but I think people will be looking for the raw and authentic, unedited, less hair and makeup, styling. They're going to be craving that kind of content. But that comes with confidence. Not everybody's happy. Not every exec's happy being on a camera. I've had to push quite a few execs over the year to say, you are ready for this. Try it. You know, sit in the corner of an airport and just record a video for your team. Just start with that. It's that confidence that I think is going to hold people back. So I see AI disrupting, but I also see an AI enabling. And I certainly see within the sales organization how they're using AI in tools like LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's going to change everything for these guys. You know, they're not going to have to click fields. This is just going to be a natural language enabler for them to find customers that are ready to talk to them. I see it as a massive opportunity, but I also see it disrupting this world and creating cultural difficulties and challenges. So it'll be an interesting couple of years, I think.
I think it's been such a great conversation over the last half an hour or so. And it's so interesting that I think, as you've said, when we move on from looking at employee activation and all of everything that encompasses is just marketing, it's interesting that I think we've probably discussed more culture, haven't we? Like the culture shift, cultural behaviours, mindset, etc., more than anything in this conversation, because it is just so important. And yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. And I guess that's our job, isn't it, as agency owners, that we have to stay on top of what's going on with AI and be ahead and helping our clients and things like that, because the disruption is there, but the enablement and the opportunity to do something great with it is there too. But we need to be ahead with that, don't we, and know what that is. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolutely fantastic conversation. So thank you so much. In terms of if anybody would like to kind of reach out, connect, etc., I'll put the link to your LinkedIn, of course. Is there any other next step or anything?
Reach out, connect, reference this podcast, and just let me know, you know, which bits resonated and what you're finding. I'm always interested to learn and hear from others as well. But yeah, connect with me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find me. So
yeah, thank you so much. Well, we'll put the link in the show notes. So if you're watching or listening right now, just head down to the show notes and you can connect on LinkedIn with Sarah. Well, thank you so much. It's been an awesome conversation. So really appreciate having you on.
Oh, cheers, Amy. I've loved it. It's quite therapeutic. So I've enjoyed every minute. So thank you.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that discussion and thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoy the Content 10X podcast, then why not hit that subscribe button on your podcast listening app of choice so that you can get updated when new episodes are released. And I'd really, really appreciate it if you could leave a review as well. That really makes a difference for the podcast. Also, please do get a copy of my book, Content 10X, More Content, Less Time, Maximum Results. It is the ultimate guide to repurposing every type of content, and it's available on Amazon in Kindle and paperback and also in audiobook as well. And you can head to content10x.com/book to find all the other places that you can get a copy of my book. And if you would like us to do your content repurposing for you, then we offer a fully end-to-end done for you content repurposing service. This is for podcasters and video content creators. We have our podcast 10x video 10x and also our specific LinkedIn 10x service, helping you to become the leading authority in your industry on LinkedIn. You can find out so much more about our services on our website. And also, please do give me a follow on the social media platforms. I share lots and lots of tips and advice on social media about content repurposing. I'm at Content 10x on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And if you try content10x.com/LinkedIn, you'll find my LinkedIn profile over there as well. All that's left to say is thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and I'll catch you in the next one.